Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. There's a discourse where the Buddha asks, he's sitting with a group of monks, and he asks them if they, anybody practices mindfulness of breathing, and the one monk says, "I practice mindfulness of breathing," and the Buddha asks him, "Well, how do you practice mindfulness of breathing?" And that monk says, "Well, I sort of having abandoned sensual desire for the future, having sort of done away with sensual desire toward the past, and having put aside perceptions of aversion in the present, both internally and externally, then I am mindful of the breath coming in and mindful of the breath going out." And the Buddha sort of says, "Well, that's one way of practicing mindfulness of breathing, but how about this way?" And then he goes into his explanation of the sort of the standard 16 steps of mindfulness of breathing. And, you know, I think for most of us, one would think, "God, that's pretty good, you know. I wish I could do that." Yeah. But I think one of the aspects of the Buddha's approach to mindfulness of breathing that isn't just a, you know, just a sort of a bare mindfulness process, or an attempt to just have this steady awareness of just the breath, but it's an exploration of many facets of our experience with the breath as the backdrop, or the breath as the thread that kind of underlies things. So when the Buddha gives his kind of standard instruction, he uses the and just paying attention to whether there's a, you know, breathing in long, one knows as breathing in a long breath, breathing out long, one knows there's that it's a long breath, and then breathing in short, you know, one knows it's a short breath, and breathing out short, one knows it's a short breath. And on a certain level, that's taking just sort of long and short breaths. But there's many, many different ways one could express that, or use as a parameter for noticing and being attentive. You know, whether it feels heavy or light, or whether it feels fast or slow, or anything. Just the different modulations of the breath being able to be attentive to the breath. And that is the beginning of the Buddha's instruction or injunction to use the breath as the fundamental foundation, and just paying attention to those different ways that the breath modulates how we experience it. And in that particular instruction, and that is the paying attention to the knowing of the breath as we experience it. Then the Buddha goes on to, because this first aspect of mindfulness of breathing is concerned with how we experience it in the body. And then, after these first two aspects, the whole structure follows, like the body, feelings, mind, and phenomena, as the same as the four foundations of mindfulness. And the rest of the, the 14 steps are concerned with training, as opposed to, just having a bare mindfulness, just bare awareness. One is training to be attentive in particular ways. One's training to investigate in particular ways. One's training to notice one's experience in different ways. So it's just a training, and you're bringing up these different perspectives in order to train attention and train the ability of the mind to recognize different patterns and aspects of experience, so that the sometimes we in meditation we tend to box ourselves in pretty tightly sometimes. We're just trying to notice one particular thing, or trying to get the mind to be one particular steady experience of something. Not quite sure what sometimes, but something. And then we're supposed to be peaceful. So then we're trying to be peaceful. I think the Buddha's opening it up and giving a variety of approaches and modes of experience, and recognizing that this is a training, this is an education, a learning, because that's the verb that the Buddha uses can be translated in those ways. It can be educating, learning, training. And the Buddha, as one breathes in and as one breathes out, one experiences the whole body. Breathing in, one experiences the whole body. Breathing out, one experiences the whole body. And one can use, the whole body experience as a basis for attention to the breath, because sometimes, again, we tend to try to narrow it a bit too tight. Sometimes we're just trying to pay attention at the tip of the nose. We're trying to pay attention at the abdomen, and those are valid approaches. But you want to give yourself the opportunity to explore and investigate and experiment and see, well, what actually works? What's actually interesting? What actually makes sense? Because sometimes even, you know, as you are using the breath as an object of attention and awareness, you know, sometimes the actual you experience the breath in different ways, and sometimes you we sort of like superimpose a kind of an anatomically correct image of where we are and who we are and what we should be experiencing, whereas just to let the experience be there, just to feel what the experience of the breath is like at that particular moment. And it could, you don't have to experience it in any particular way or in any particular part of the body. And you can experiment with doing it. This is one of the ways that Ajahn Lee Damodaro, Ajahn Jeff's, not his direct teacher, but his teacher's teacher, and then he's translated a lot of Ajahn Lee's work, and he's used the breath in many innovative ways, and just, you know, really taking the breath and experiencing it in breathing through the body, breathing through experience, taking different ways that we, because it's more like a breath energy. Again, so if we try to be too anatomically correct, then we're just sort of, it's sort of air coming in and out of the lungs. And really, the breath is more like a life force or a breath energy that we experience as we're breathing, as we're living, as we're being a human being that has a life force. So just to open it up in terms of how we explore and investigate and experience these different sensations and how we experience this fundamental bodily function of living and breathing. And it's a becomes much more interesting and on a certain level uncertain what you're what you're going to experience. It's just saying, what is it like just to sit here and breathe, and what do we experience? How do we experience it in the different parts of the body? How can we take the breath and move that energy through to maybe energize the body, energize the mind, brighten the mind, or steady the mind, soothe the mind, calm the mind, settle the mind, settle the body, because sometimes we feel it. It's agitation or restlessness. Okay, we can use the breath to just breathe into the body and settle it and soothe it. So there's many different things that we can be doing and experimenting with and trying out and working with. And it's the breath that is the fundamental thread or the underlying experience. But to give oneself that opportunity. How do we experience it? What is the experience in the body? Ajahn Jeff talks about in his early days of living with at the monastery and practicing, and there being a woman who came regularly to the monastery, who was a teacher and older and experienced in the practice, and she said that she got into concentration very quickly was by taking two different points of attention at the same time, so that breathing in and breathing out, that taking a point at the tip of the nose and at the base of the spine, that's where she felt she was breathing. So that, yeah, anatomically you say, well, that's impossible. You can't do that. You don't breathe from the base of your spine. But as a meditation and a training, you can do all sorts of things. What is the experience? Or how do you view experience? How do you play with experience in order to be a meditator that sustains interest in what you're doing and is able to actually steady the mind? I remember meeting one person who and they don't even use mindfulness of breathing. But he could enter concentration very quickly. Actually, Debbie knows it as Kayseri's brother. And there's a Thai woman who's been practicing since she was a young girl. Her brother, who they all actually, they're Thai, mother's Thai, father's Australian, they all grew up their younger years in Thailand, and they all were educated in Australia. And the brother ended up living in Australia, and so he was fundamentally an Australian, but he had this Thai background and he meditated. And he was a very accomplished meditator. He could make his mind very peaceful very quickly. And I remember sitting and asking, well, what's your method of meditation? He says, well, actually, I never really had a teacher, because I went to Australia when I was quite young. And I said, but, you know, my mom just sort of taught me to experiment with this and that. And I just took an image of, I just make an image in my mind as I was sitting in meditation, that I was, you know, sit quietly, relax the body. Then I would make an image as if I was drinking a glass of water. And then I would, just allowing that water to come in and bring in, cool everything down, settle everything down, and then my mind would become peaceful and concentrated. Whatever works. You know, there. To be able to give oneself that opportunity to experiment or to expand the boundaries of what we think we should be doing, and of course, you know, the Buddha gave. Not just mindfulness of breathing, he gave all sorts of different instructions to be able to work with the meditation. So that, you know, sometimes even, you know, mindfulness of breathing might become, you know, frustrating or difficult. But you can still take that, when, say, the meditation or the mindfulness training, and direct attention to developing loving kindness, or recollecting Buddha Dhamma Sangha, or recollecting the different parts of the body, the elements. I mean, there's all sorts of ways of directing attention that we can be doing that will help us to settle the mind and allow the mind to become more steady and focused. But with the parameters or when we're using mindfulness of breathing, we can be attentive to just like that, the experiencing the breath and the body, and how do we do experience that. We can also, the Buddha's instruction to be calming the bodily formations. I breathe in, calming the bodily formation, I breathe out. You know, using the body as a base again. And paying attention to that feeling of calming, of settling, of stilling, of steadying, of there being a peaceful experience in the body. And then also the way it's oftentimes interpreted and explained is actually calming the breathing process. Just really paying attention to calming and settling the experience of the breath itself. Really taking the breath where do we experience it? Just focus in on the sensation of the breath itself. And then allow it to settle, allow it to become steady, allow it to become smooth, allow it to become soothing, because that's where it becomes peaceful and calm. It's soothing. How do we soothe? Allow the breath to be soothing. Let it soothe the body. Let it soothe the mind. There's a tranquility that's established. So that experiment with that, and how to do that on the in and out breath. Because sometimes we, you know, just by the effort that we put in trying to focus, you know, makes it agitated sometimes. And so it's like Ajahn Chah in one of the readings a few days ago, where he was saying, it's like if I didn't pay attention to the breath, then breathing was actually, you know, quite comfortable or pleasant, or I didn't really notice it. But just by trying to pay attention to the breath, then it become difficult and labored and uncomfortable. So sometimes we try too hard, and it becomes uncomfortable. So that to pay attention to the approach that we have, or the underlying way that we're holding it, so that calming the breath, calming the body, allowing it to become more settled and still, even though there's a rhythm of the breath, but there's a stillness when we're not agitated or we're not trying too hard. There's ability to just step back. Well, this is the way it is. So that these are, you know, we're making a certain effort at stilling and settling and bringing tranquility into the body and the mind. But the reality is, you know, we're also learning. There's an insights will come from that watching, the alertness that we bring to the observation, they tend to come hand in hand. That they there is a tendency in some teachings or some teachers to speak about as if there's there's like an insight meditation and then there's a tranquility meditation, but you don't really see that in the discourses of the Buddha. The Buddha doesn't make that kind of distinction or separation. If there's as we bring the mind to a place of stillness and clarity, it's quite natural that there'll be insights and discernment arising from that. As we are more discerning and investigative, and we really take an interest in something, it'll tend to calm us down, it'll tend to settle them up, so that there's these work together, so that to not to be sort of too worried, oh, I can't spend too much time on tranquility because I've got to get on to the insight practices. But just learn how to pay attention to what the state of the mind and state of the body actually is. Is it peaceful? Is it restless? Is it dull? Is it bright? What's the experience? How do we work with that? Are we interested? Are we bored? What's up? What's behind that? What's going on? So there are these. As we pay attention to that, then you find that it actually leads quite naturally into when there is that quality of interest, it'll lead naturally into a feeling of delight or of ease, a sense of piti and sukha in Pali, usually translated as joy and happiness, sometimes as rapture, but it's not necessarily, so when we have the idea of rapture, the image we might have is one of pretty ecstatic, but it's not necessarily that pronounced or that extreme. Just a sense of delight, a sense of well-being, a sense of sense of fullness in the being able to enjoy breathing in, breathing out, being present with the meditation, being present with the moment, that in itself is aspects of the feeling of piti, of sukha. So that to take note of that, be attentive, breathing in, that's the experience, breathing out. As one starts to take that interest and there is a kind of an exhilaration that comes from the practice and the settling of the mind and the possibility of the of the peaceful mind, and to, you know, to be attentive to experiencing what they call citta sankhara, the mind conditioner, the conditioning aspect of the mind. And this is, the Buddha points to feeling and perception. These are the, you know, just when this is what builds the mind, what conditions the mind, what proliferates the mind or fabricates the mind. Just this, these fundamental building blocks of feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Feeling, perception in terms of memory and the associations, associative thinking that we have. And so that between feeling, associative thinking, memory, then the mind starts to build and gain momentum and proliferate. So just to be able to recognize that, experiencing that, and seeing more clearly how the mind gets built, how the mind gets conditioned, how the mind states get created. Experiencing it, feeling it quite clearly. And then, as the fourth section of the fourth instruction of that section of the calming the mental conditioning, the mind conditioners, the mind fabricators, the mind, those fabrications of mind, those building blocks of mind. It's really settling and steadying and stilling. And you really, you can do that. It's that you don't have to be constantly prey to the mind proliferating and pulling and thinking and constantly running off in different directions with whatever association or impingement that occurs. You can actually consciously calm that. You can consciously settle that. You can recognize that's another sort of proliferation. That's another train of thought that's sort of getting ahead of steam. I don't have to be dragged along by it. I can allow that to settle. I can let that go. Attentiveness to those fundamental building blocks of the mental experience. And part of it is just really seeing all these things that we think are so solid. You know, my mental state, my mood, my feeling, my ideas, my opinions, my views, all of that, you know, it would seem so solid, so substantial. And you realize, well, no, it's just built up from these little bits that come together, and they're sort of the glue that holds it together is our desire and our ignorance, our delusion. And it just gains momentum. We get swept up in it. And then, you know, consciously deconstructing that, paying attention. Oh yeah, that's the feeling and perception. That's what's underlying that. And then there's a freedom and a spaciousness that we can experience. And this was the, I say this, it moves into the next section that the Buddha talks in terms of the, say, the mind itself, experiencing the mind I breathe in, experiencing the mind I breathe out. And it sort of moves into the, similar to the, we just came across it, I guess, yesterday, the reading of Ajahn Chah's meeting with Ajahn Mun, and the instruction that Ajahn Mun gave to Ajahn Chah to be attentive to making it, say, the mindfulness and awareness distinguishing between, say, the underlying mind itself or awareness and the moods of the mind, seeing that these are actually two different things, that there you have a particular mood or a thought or a mind object that arises, a view, an opinion, a proliferation. But there's also the actual mind itself. And we tend to, say, get swept up into the moods of the mind, the states of the mind, the thoughts that are within the mind, and it all gets mushed up together. And we neglect that actually behind that there is an awareness, there is the fundamental function of the mind to know, just to know, to be aware. And if we can start to experience that, experiencing that fundamental mind, then we get a different perspective on the moods of the mind. We can let those moods of the mind go. We can allow them to pass. We can allow them to play themselves out without, because usually when the various thoughts and moods, they take over. You know, I have a good thought, but I'm a good person. I have a bad thought, I must be a bad person. We make all sorts of judgments around that. We get entangled in the that proliferating tendencies of the mind without recognizing that, well, actually, fundamentally below that, the mind has just a basic function, just of knowing, of awareness, and we can come back to that. When we do that, then we don't have to take the moods of the mind so seriously. It's not that you don't have moods and thoughts and views, but it doesn't sort of take over and run with it all. Say the next instruction that the Buddha gives is to say, gladdening the mind I breathe in, gladdening the mind I breathe out. And say, there's this injunction, which I think is really wonderful. You're starting to talk about pretty refined experience. And then the Buddha sort of stops and says, make sure to not take yourself too seriously. Make sure to not get caught up in the... the Buddha is always saying, you know, I teach one thing only, suffering, end of suffering. And if you take all that too seriously, you think, oh, it's just all, everything's miserable, it's hopeless. So I said, well, no, you actually have to be attentive to gladdening the mind and, you know, really bringing a sense of joy, freshness to the experience of practice. And, you know, generally the occasion that happened in the time of the Buddha where the Buddha gave meditation instruction on the say unattractive nature of the body, and then he went in retreat and came back after a couple of weeks or whatever, and the monks had got so averse to the body and existence that some of them had committed suicide. And the Buddha said, "Why, everybody?" When he found that out, okay, get everybody back together again. And that's an occasion where the Buddha gave instruction on mindfulness of breathing, and sort of that. This is because it's balancing, you know, all of this, all of these aspects of attentiveness to the breath, and using the breath in its full scope, where you're paying directing attention to, in the ways that recognize the experience of the body, experience of feeling, experience of mind, experience of phenomena. This is this balancing, and again, part of that gladdening the mind when breathes in, gladdening the mind when breathes out. There's a very conscious injunction to bring attention to that quality of gladdening, of delight. And of course, again, that would be if one takes and runs with that and ends up just focusing on gratification in some way, then the Buddha would say, "Well, no, let's get another balance going. Look at experience in a different way, so it settles that." But you know, what is the Buddha is making this very clear that the aspect of well-being is an important aspect for concentrating the mind and settling the mind, because when there's a sense of well-being, there's an ease that comes that allows the mind to focus more deeply again, to settle more deeply, to let everything external drop away, and that's where the mind is able to kind of drop into states of stillness and concentration. It's when one is experiencing a sense of ease, one can let one's guard down. One can just be at ease and just allow everything to drop away, and allow the mind to drop into a state of steadiness and stillness. And just being able to, say the Buddha says, concentrating the mind when breathes in, concentrating the mind when breathes out. The breath is still there, but one's moving into it, dropping into it, merging with it, unifying with it. I mean, there's all sorts of words that we use to describe that, but there's, you know, it's just not, you're not discarding the breath. But the breath is the vehicle that you engage attention with, so that you're able to come to a place of steadiness and a continuity of steadiness, and then concentrating. Because sometimes, you see, I'm just using the word concentrating already tends to give, I mean, there's a certain sort of tenseness and tightness of trying to make the mind, forcing the mind to be steady, that is elicited with that, just the word concentrating. But when the word is translated into Thai, it's usually translated as sort of firmly establishing the mind, sort of establishing the mind firmly as one's breathing in, establishing the mind firmly as it breathes out. So that, and then the Buddha talks to freeing the mind, liberating the mind, one breathes in, freeing the mind, or liberating the mind, one breathes out. And not so much about complete and full liberation, but more like freeing the mind from its hindrances, freeing the mind from its limitations, freeing the mind from its obstructions, being able to relinquish those lingering obstructions and aspects that keep the mind circling around something that is unwholesome, unskillful, that is negative. Because as the mind becomes very settled and steady, by definition, it's completely wholesome, it's completely skillful. There isn't any dissonance of kind of tainted moods or tainted. The mind's very bright and it's just full of goodness. The Buddha then goes on to encourage or instruct around the phenomena, the nature of experience, so that using the lens of impermanence or anicca, so impermanence, inconstancy, uncertainty. So breathing in, recognizing that tendency of change, of impermanence, uncertain nature, inconstant, and not steady. So that just breathing in, breathing out, mental, physical, internal, external, sort of large or small, coarse or refined. It's just, that's the nature of things to be impermanent. And it's not problematic. It's just the way it is. But you're sort of seeing it, it's just this way. And you can view it in from the perspective of letting go rather than having an issue with it or being concerned about it or being fearful of it or desiring it to change in a particular way that fits one's desires. It's just this is just the nature of phenomena. Viewing things through the lens of dispassion. That's a quality. This is just the way things are. Don't have to get excited, desiring, swept up by anything. There can be a quality of coolness, of dispassion, of disenchantment. And it's not sort of it's not averse. It's just sort of seeing clearly, seeing things in a way that allows it all to be very clear. But it's not creating a sense of shaking or agitation or disharmony within the mind. It's just this quality of steady, cool dispassion. And that's, again, there's a sense of fullness there as well. Because sometimes we think of dispassion, it's you're pushing it away. But that's where the Buddha talks about the cause of suffering. Desire, and we can understand sort of fairly easily that sensual desire, that desire for sensual gratification. That can be pretty agitating. But then the Buddha says, well, it's also the desire for becoming, and then also the desire for not becoming. So the desire of wanting things to be a certain way, and the desire wanting them to not be a certain way. You see, all of that's a trap. All of just the nature of desire in all its different ways, shapes, forms, pushing and pulling, wanting, not wanting, just creates more entanglement and dis-ease. And the quality of dispassion is opening up the space to experience a quality of space, of spaciousness, of peace, of a sort of ease and freedom. So that, be attentive to that, breathing in, attentive to that dispassion, breathing out. And all of these are, as I said at the beginning, all of these are training. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be like this all the time, or that you've got to try to get this and hold it to be like this all the time. It's more like you're training, you're investigating, you're giving the mind something to work with, educating the mind, using these perspectives, using these parameters, and turning to using the parameter of cessation, of stopping, of allowing things to really stop, to settle, to cease. Because there's this constant momentum in the mind to be just pulled into the next thing. And then what? And then what? And then I'm going to do this. Even, when we're meditating, trying to become peaceful, and sort of, and then I'm going to do this. And then, when I get my mind peaceful, then I'm going to do this. Just put it all down. Let it cease. Let it stop for a change. Give yourself a break. And then I just say, yeah, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give myself a break. I'm going to stop. then I'll be good. And it's this constant. There's this momentum. It's just so addictive. And so you say, oh, but there's really giving that attention. That's the Buddha saying, yeah, ceasing. It's not so easy. And then the last aspect that the Buddha points to is the aspect of relinquishment, of really being able to get to relinquish, to give up, to, and particularly around the relinquishment is more around the sense of self, the sense of me, the sense of me as the focal point of all experience. Yeah, that's pretty scary. And it isn't as if one, again, it's not as if one's, because if you come from a place of annihilation, of aversion to the experience of I, me, and mine, then that in itself is a becoming, that's a being. Propping up another relationship, this is that sense of relinquishing, being able to really put things down, to let it go, to really give up. And it's not give up in a sense of defeatist, but give up in terms of not feeding the cycle of delusion and desire. Just not feeding it, not buying into it, not getting caught into that cycle. No, that takes a real relinquishment. And of course, the result is tremendous peace and well-being. We have to give oneself the opportunity to experience that, to experiment with it. So all of that, that's these instructions that the Buddha gives, I think starting the talk this evening, sort of as a contradistinction between the tendency to You know, and just as in the Buddha's time, the monk sort of says, "Well, you know, I'm just sort of relinquished the desire for the future and the past, and just don't get caught in aversion. Just stay in equanimity and mindfulness. Just the knowing of the breath. Just." Content with the breath in the present moment. And, you know, that's a... And the Buddha said, yeah, that's one way of doing it. But there's a lot more to actually do with it. There's a lot more to learn. There's a lot more to train with. And, you know, one hears the same things in contemporary instruction. You just have to have. There's nothing to do but just have mindfulness or just bare awareness, and just have to do that. And yeah, it's to a certain degree that's correct, but there's all on this whole. You know, the human mind is much more complex and layered than that, and we have to have the tools to understand it more clearly and be able to experience the possibility of real freedom. That's the Buddha's teachings are these tools that give us the opportunity to both learn from as well as learn from our experience and learn about the nature of phenomena and to be free, to experience a real liberation. To offer that for reflection this evening.